Interesting Podcast.
All
welcome
right.
Back welcome to back. The channel. Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, it's okay. All right, welcome Aniket to the podcast.
Welcome Aniket.
Yeah, hey, hello everyone. I'm Aniket. I'm right now located in South Korea. So I work for a company called Cadence Design System. We basically have softwares to which companies use to manufacture or design their chips. I'll not get into details of customers and everything, but yeah, it's an interesting job to work with where I get to know about silicon in general. And it's one of my area of interest as well. So thanks, Sanman, for inviting me and Abhishek for this podcast.
Welcome.
So guys, what's the topic today to discuss?
You're the expert on chips, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about processors in general and benchmarking and how it works. So I'll share my thoughts on it, like that people should not consider that's the only criteria for choosing any chip, and why sometimes, I mean, there has been an open news about it, that how some companies are faking the performance, and then when you, in reality, when you use the product, it's actually much, maybe much more worse than what people have thought about it. So yeah,
I exactly had that thought in my mind, and I wanted to ask you, like, what is like your take, as in you work closely with the companies, suppliers, chip manufacturing, the whole criteria. So what do you think, who can we trust as consumers, and how does it actually function, benchmark? Can we trust anything nowadays? Like, is it all not a marketing gimmick?
No. So there are companies who are kind of genuine or honest about it. But yeah, people should not just rush and buy whatever is new coming out of it. They should do their own research and figure it out in reality, whether the product is working or not. Like what happened in the past also, like the bandgate and all, right? People, or even the Apple's, antenna gate. People bought a phone and then they realized that, oh, my antenna is not working, and Apple funnily claimed that they should hold it in a right way, right? And that's bizarre for anything. But I ultimately, I guess they realized it, the problem in it. So what people need to do is just wait for a few days to check the reality, identify what exactly is going on. I'm sure someone, now the tech community is so big that you will see a review where someone is breaking something out. So they'll figure it out, what if they're cheating some way and all. If you're a geek, I'll recommend some websites. One of them is nanoreview.net. If you go to that website, you will see that it has a good benchmarking details, and not just details. I mean, Antutu scores and Geekbench score, that is pretty common, right? Every YouTuber probably shows that number, but what that website has, it has more details to it. So if you just go inside any processor, let's say I'm just opening A16 Bionic, I will see that it has details in it. It has 6-core chipset. It is manufacturing on 4-nanometer technology. It has 2 cores. One of that core is at 3460 megahertz, and other 4 cores are at 2020 megahertz. So that indicates that, yeah, I mean, reality, they have 2 cores which are operating at 3.4 gigahertz. Similarly, if you go to any like Android side of similar processor, let's say Snapdragon plus Gen 1, on the same website, you will see that it's again manufactured on the same 4-nanometer processor, but it has only one high performance core at operating at 3.2 gigahertz. Then they have 3 cores which are operating at 2.750 megahertz, and then the 4 cores are at 2000 megahertz. So that indicates
that. You can always share the screen so that we can talk to the ones who are on audio, and then we can. There are folks on YouTube who can always see.
Yeah, so let me share my screen.
There's a lot of numbers. They're like, let me keep track. Which one is where?
I think. Yeah, it says the sharing is disabled.
There you go.
So if I go to this website, so let me go back again. Yeah, so if see, this is the nanoreview.net, and it has all the processor listing in it, and it's basically sorted on Geekbench score, whichever is the top performant. So if I go inside Snapdragon, you will see that it has all details in it. And you can clearly see that it's a Cortex 1 at 3.2, 3 cores at 2.75, and 4 cores at 2000 megahertz, right? So what happens is...
I think we cannot see your screen yet. Is it visible?
Yeah, I can see.
For some reason, I'm not getting it. Oh, okay. It's on another page. That's fine. Sorry.
Okay. So what happens is when you have these scores, what this indicates is that's what I believe manufacturers are doing, or at least Android is doing it internally. When you request for certain resources with some API-based request, it most of the time the benchmark will go into this high performance score. While in reality, your day-to-day usage, which is you're picking up your phone calls, playing some light games, turning on music, running some apps in background, and parallelly doing some multitasking, replying emails and all, or keep your WhatsApp running and all, downloading images, that may go into this mid-core in reality. So probably one of the controversy which recently came, which we can talk openly about, is about Samsung. Maybe that's the case where that's how they detected it, where the performance was happening on this, but when they switched to the games, the performance was dropped, and maybe it was running on this particular core. That's how they able to extract some data out of it and figure it out what they're running on, what frequency they're running on. So yeah, I mean, these are the ways where
And where does the fourth section, the low processor? I think that's more of back-end.
It's like when you... So if you keep your phone down, you're not using it, all alerts, your
background refresh activities,
system running activities, those probably are going into this type of course, which is good. But that's where I guess Apple is shining, right? I mean, even if you see the lowest score here.
One question, if they put the gaming performance of Snapdragon 8 plus Gen 1 at 100 and Apple supersedes this, so how does that work? Like, that is also 100, this is also 100. It's like not a comparison, right?
100?
Performance, if you see right below.
Yeah. I really don't know how they did this this score, on what basis they determine this score. It's maybe they are doing some segregations with based on that top, like how much frame per second you are hitting, right? So in this case, you are still hitting the frame per second, and in Apple also you are hitting same the benchmark of frames per second, right? So it's, I mean, both are meeting means it's a score of 100. Ideally, what they should do is at that time, they should measure battery, how much battery is degrading, or how much thermally the phone throttling. Is heating, throttling or temperature is going up. So if they do something which basically equalizes the performance across the devices, then that may be a good benchmark. But just giving a number that, oh, you hit this frame and now this is the score, is maybe hiding the real issue, right?
Correct.
So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of data here, like you have individual scores, then this is where I think the PUBG score is, right? So this is 89 frames per second, then 60 frames per second.
On the phone, it's actually not that bad. Like, you know, 89 frames per second on a phone without any, cooling fans, or like, I don't know what sort of technology they use for cooling. I think mostly it is, what is it exactly used on phones for cooling? Like,
they're using passive heat sink, which is the copper based
heat sink. Okay.
Those are the ones.
I think they were exploring, probably I saw it in some YouTube videos, they're exploring vapor chamber based. I think maybe this ROG phone and all is using it, right?
I mean, if you've seen Jerry Rig Everything, where he's unboxing or he's breaking open these phones.
Things,
So you see the thermal paste, you see these vapor chambers. The higher end devices, of course, they have better specific cooling, and they have this add-on devices, dual charging capabilities, one on the side, one on the one down, and you have that add-on fan at the back to, you know, keep it extremely cool because you're running it for hours and hours. So that's of course a very niche case of gaming, but yeah, that's a big thing. That's a big, you know, gaming, mobile gaming, you know, just take it out of the pocket, start gaming, you know, nothing as convenient as that. Just like the death of SLR, you know, the phone is killing the PC for gaming also. So yeah.
Yeah,
one
I
question
think
I have for you. Cutting you off in between. So is there like, when companies design these chips, okay, and they put it in commercial devices, they extract the most out of that chip, or do they leverage some, they make it,
they cap it
underclocked for some reason?
No. So what's happening is there are like different design methodologies that exist, right? So when we do an analysis of any chip, we do it at different voltages and different temperatures. We start with, let's say, higher volt of, let's say, 1 volt, and go up to, let's say, 0.475 volt. So it's like millivolt in reality, right? So the reason is you have wide range of operating voltages. So when, let's say, your phone is in the night, just at lying at your desk or next to you, it's ideally consuming the least power in it, because your screen is not on, maybe some antennas or something is turned off, some notifications are turned off and everything. So at that time, it has to meet certain performance. So for that, we have to do analysis at the lowest voltage. Then when we do game or anything, we have to use the highest voltage. So what happens is that's why they have different frequency targets at each voltages. That's how they design these chips. During that, what happens is within that process, they see that, let's say, they start with a target of power and a frequency. Now, ideally, no one can achieve both together. It hardly, let's say, they'll start with a very aggressive target. I'm sure if you go to the Snapdragon, even if it says 3.2 gigahertz, I'm sure the designer must have started with 3.3 in mind. And during that 3.3, with some power number, he was able to, couldn't achieve 3.3. So he said, okay, with this power number, we can achieve 3.2. So he lowered the frequency. Similarly, what they can do is they can keep lowering the voltage and figure it out till what time they can maintain this 3.2. So ideally, even if they do analysis at 1 volt, they can still, let's say, lower it by 0.9 or something like that, 0.995, and they'll see if it's still operating. If it is operating, then yeah, they will. This is all simulations, by the way. It's nothing in the physical chip. It's entirely software-based simulations. If they think it's working, it helps them. That's how they improve. It helps them in bidding later on, right? So they will see that, oh, my design is now robust, that it's designed in such a way that it can operate at a lower voltage also while still maintaining that frequency. So that's where this AMD's X series comes into picture, right? So AMD, whenever they say, 3.6 giga, whatever, like 5 gigahertz, they release one processor, right? 3600, let's say, for example, hypothetical. I don't know number it has. And then 3600X comes and it says, we made 5.2 here as a boost clock. And that's the reason that it either the process got improved, where the silicon itself got improved, where they were able to achieve much better frequency. They were running with some sort of pessimism in the analysis. And if they bump up slightly more power, they can achieve more higher frequency, or reduce the power but still maintain the same frequency. I mean, either way it can go. So that's how usually the design happens. They keep try to keep both the balances, frequency as well as power.
So year on year, so Snapdragon, like, how is it technically even possible to have a newer, faster processor every year? Or is it something that they design once and for the next 3 years, they kind of test it, you know, do the voltage and then cap it much, and then next year we'll do a little bit more?
So it has to do with the architecture. So if I think
but why would they do it from ground up architecture design every year?
No. They don't do that. Actually, ARM does it. So whenever ARM architecture changes, they go from, say, V8 to V9. So I think now everyone is at V9. That brings up a boost. The other is the manufacturing technology, right? Right now, everyone is at 4 nanometer. I think probably Samsung claimed that they started the 3 nanometer in production, right? And I'm sure TSMC also will come up in a few days, or I don't know if they already came up. They'll also claim it. So I'm sure the next Apple is going to claim that they are on 3 nanometer. So one is where you're shrinking the transistor size. That brings more power, because when you shrink a transistor, you are basically reducing the die size, right? So if you reduce the die size, means you can fit more logic to it. So that's where the space gets created. So Apple can fit, let's say, entire your video processing engine in it, right? So now you're reducing the bandwidth or the load on the entire CPU. And there is a dedicated function that exists which will do this video processing. So now your CPU can work much faster, right? It's not spending time in video processing. Your camera can directly put everything onto this video processor and goes out from there. So that's how you improve the entire CPU performance. I mean, these are the things which are basically slowly coming into a chip and improving the size while still maintaining the same area.
So one question I had is about ARM, right? So there's this I don't know, I had this thought that maybe companies are becoming too lazy and they're trusting ARM with like their architectural designs every year. They're not trying to innovate on their own. So say that ARM one day does not do enough, they're milking the same architecture over and over and over, and they're not trying to update that too much, tinker with it too much, because, they're achieving their target appreciation every year by just reducing the die size. So
So ARM is not reducing the die size. ARM is basically giving a new architecture. Not
changing the so they change the architecture every year.
Yeah, they do with some versions update. So I think it's two-year cycle what they have, where a version or architecture changes. It's not entirely dependent on ARM, right? The neural engine comes from, Samsung designed its own neural engine, while Qualcomm designed its own neural engine. So it's a SoC, right? When we talk about Snapdragon, CPU is just one part of it, GPU is another part of it. There are sub blocks of SoCs. So one of them is, let's say, your image processor. The other one is your modem, which comes from Qualcomm or any Intel or anyone. So these are the things which, again, keep improving over the year, and they also get integrated. So it's a combination of everything improving at its own pace, and then that is what is helping the entire chip to improve the performance.
Okay. Actually, what I meant by my question was it's ARM which is designing the architecture for the entire world right now. Like when it comes to...
Designing it for everyone. Apple gets their RTL and then they tune it, I believe.
They take ARM's designs, right?
ARM design, and then they have authority to change the entire instruction set or whatever they took. If whatever they want based on their requirement. I guess Qualcomm and these guys also have that authority. Samsung also has probably that authority. I don't know if they're exploring it though, but
So what I feel is obviously I'm an outsider, so I don't understand much of it. But what I take away from this is that, they are always so close to each other in terms of performance. And so I feel they have become lazy, and they're not exploring interior, maybe architects who design their own designs and maybe try to invent something on their own, because they do all the manufacturing and everything. So maybe they can tinker with the design and come up with like a better solution to what ARM is offering, because ARM designs it across the board, right?
So I believe at one point of time, Samsung was exploring this route where they had their own processor group, which was developing a similar processor, but I am not sure if they kind of abandoned that thing. I believe I saw it in some news somewhere. I think people have tried it. Now, since it's been a long thing, I know at one point of time, I read an article also. We have a link, so it's a public information, by the way. At one point of time, LG was working with Intel on developing an ARM processor for its mobile. Very bizarre, but I guess now LG has came out of the mobile group, projects itself. I mean, that was one of the idea, but probably no one was able to beat Qualcomm and Apple right in the game.
ARMs came out, but they flopped badly, and then everyone defaulted to what was trending and what was safe and already well developed
working.
Because amount of research and funding you have to go into getting something from scratch.
Right. I mean, it takes a lot of resources and all just to develop the entire one processor ecosystem. You have to have very good engineers, and there are like within the design aspects, there are like individual groups who are doing very specific things in terms of analysis that, okay, functionally the chip is working. They are meeting the power target, they are meeting the frequency target, they are meeting certain area target, they are meeting some layout checks, which will make it chip manufacturable, right? I mean, these are like tons of things. I'm sure in every project, there will be at least 10 to 100 people involved in just making it successful, and that too with certain skills. And right now, if you check VLSI engineers, which I call it as our ecosystem, these VLSI engineers are very very much in demand. They are very short. There is shortage everywhere. You'll see a lot of job openings for those. So
along with chip shortage.
with chip shortage, there is a VLSI engineer shortage. So
chip shortage, how are they kind of solving that? Because that's now the industry is now trying to change completely, trying to do something different. Chip shortage, it's been, almost 2 years now.
So chip shortage will, I believe, when I was talking to some of my colleagues and seniors and from other industries and all, most of them said that sometimes companies overbook. They estimate some demands in future. Let's take a classic example of GPUs, right? Because of this Bitcoin mining. I'm sure NVIDIA and AMD, I'm pretty confident on NVIDIA though. NVIDIA had a lot of
orders
for this entire GPU. And now today only I was reading that Newegg is giving a GPU and a HD or 2K monitor at the same cost together. So you can get a 3060 and a HD monitor, or 3070 and 2K monitor together as a deal. So that's bizarre. I mean, that's where I think this demand will fall down. But the good part is this basically started additional manufacturing units to come up, right? Like Intel is developing its own in Ohio. Samsung started its own manufacturing in, I guess, Texas. TSMC is planning something to build up in US. So the things are like, because of this, once you have units up and running, the cost of manufacturing chip will come down. That will make a consumable product much more, IoT compatible or much more faster. Like you can think of an ARM processor going into your refrigerator right tomorrow and can do smart things.
Manufacturing units coming in India also. Somebody announced.
I think Foxconn has a deal with Vedanta and they are developing something in Gujarat. Yes.
I heard that
a
couple of days back.
The Exynos chipset was recently spoken about on YouTube, that the iPhone 14 has a A15. And they were like, you know, how come? They were like, did you have excess and you had more in stock that you wanted to kind of finish off? Or, you know, why not the A16s on them also? But yeah, they were like, you know,
No, Apple will keep using, I guess, A15 for next maybe 4 years. It'll go into some SE someday and they'll keep using it. It'll go into iPad. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. But the iPads are getting the M series, right?
No, the lowest, low version iPad. Like the low version. The cheapest one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, they keep throwing these trillions and billions of these numbers during their showcase. I'm like, nice, but you know, what do we do with all that information? I mean, trillion, all this neural thought process, neural, you know, algorithm, whatever that, engines and all that. That's all nice, but you know, what do we do with it? You want to take a photo? Then, thank you.
See, the thing is, So I just feel they do that because, like, you know, there are a couple of apps which can utilize that extra bit of performance boost that you get out of those processors. Otherwise, day-to-day work, like there would be obviously, like, you know, an upper limit to that. Once you've hit that, you don't necessarily go beyond that. And that's going to happen very soon. Smoothness cannot go above a certain point, you know, all of those things.
Yeah, so, I mean, seriously, like, people talk about, oh, Apple is not recording 8K video now. I mean, even if it's the fastest chip, why they don't release an 8K recording option? But, I mean, people don't have 8K TV with them right now.
You can record 8K, fine, but how will you transfer it? How will you transfer
and
it?
Yeah, where you store it?
Yeah, I mean, you have how many, 10 years old? Lightning cable. That'll take years to transfer. Like, you know, leave it.
We were having this discussion. Like, we want to do that test, right? Transferring 4 to 5 GB from data.
Once type C.
Like, I would do it on a laptop, Windows laptop, and an Android phone, and he would do that on an
MacBook
M1 Pro, chip Mac on an iPhone. So let's see which one is.
What I was thinking
as an experiment is to connect an older technology to the newer laptops, right? Let's say connecting an older iPod to a new Mac, M1 Mac, and see if it gets recognized at least. I'm sure it will, but I don't know, since they killed the iTunes, I don't know if it will be still detectable or not.
iTunes has been killed? That's news.
No, iTunes is still
there. Yeah, iTunes. No, iTunes as a software is killed, right? They divided into a podcast. Then there is a separate app for, and it recognizes as a device now if you connect it as a phone, right? So I believe iTunes is not there anymore. In the App Store or somewhere, you recognize your phone. The music is there, then your podcast is there, right? And then I believe the Finder will recognize an iPhone also.
I still have it. I think
maybe on Windows it's still there. Maybe it's Windows legacy. Apple might have discontinued.
Yeah. iTunes with the Bonjour service, which starts with Windows, makes it slow.
I used to always kill that.
Yeah.
It does not behave properly still with Windows. Like, no mistake. Like, you know, still it's been so many advancements. So whatever you know, processor you're using, it's gonna slow it down. It's gonna block so many resources.
The M1, right? I have one question with the M1, and now the M1 Pro Max Extra Large shopping mall that they've made. You know, it's like, oh God. I mean, they just like added on, made it gigantic. I don't know.
And like another, like I'll follow up with a question, but maybe you can answer some months first.
Yeah, so the way M1 is created is, it's always been what you call, I mean, it's I'll say they created it in a very smart way, right? It's always a scalable architecture that they created. So what happens is, there is a theoretical limit, right? You cannot put practically you cannot do that much of analysis, right? If you keep integrating everything into one single wafer or one chip, So what you need to do is you need to basically stack, put them next to each other, right?
Mm.
So the way Apple did it is they designed an interface which has a very high bandwidth so that communication between these two doesn't go through any PCB, so or right. doesn't go through any connections, right? It can just stick to next to each other, and then it simply works. I'm sure that type of architecture is now getting explored everywhere. I believe AMD or next Intel may come up with processor may have something like that, where they can improve the bandwidth very significantly. And the only problem, I believe, the way it will have it is the software needs to be updated to utilize that type of multitasking or multi-threading, right? Or multi-cores. I think Apple has a very good hands-on because they have control over their software. I believe Microsoft needs to work with maybe AMD or Intel on very closely, or I'm sure they must be developing their own processor also. So once they do that, I think the performance, Windows will get a huge boost in performance. I'm pretty sure on that. It's a very good idea that no one has explored before. I don't know why. Yeah. I mean, at least AMD did something recently, right? This 3800X 3D, right? Where they put a memory stack on it.
I think if you buy the topmost tier Windows laptops, it gives Mac a run for their money. I'm using one currently, so I'm telling you, breathtaking performance. So the processor in this is 5800 series, and obviously 3070 GPU. So it flies through most of the things. I was rendering a video for the podcast yesterday. It took me 2.5 minutes to render the entire thing. So
yeah, but I think where Apple is good is in the battery. That's it. Yeah. Right now.
Yeah, battery. So this is power hungry. I cannot use this without a power source.
Exactly.
But that's okay, because these things require power. Gaming requires power. Gaming is something that they're not doing at all with Max. Like I'm not seeing any good gaming apps or like games in general for Mac.
And even if they will do it through the Apple Arcade, and then it's kind of be processed or done on the back end. And you just really
have something called Vulkan API, which I guess game developer needs to use, which is maybe difficult for them to port it right. So I guess there's no monetary benefit for people to port it, because they don't know if anyone is gaming on Mac. It's a chicken egg problem, right? People will say, oh, there are no game available, and these guys will say, oh, there are no gamers available. So it will keep getting delayed.
So I have one more question, but I think we're running out of time, so I'll make it fast. Where does this stop? Like, we are already sitting at 4 nanometer. We'll go down to 3, maybe 2. Then what is next? Like, are we doing then like any breakthrough in terms of like using an alternate for silicon, or maybe all of those things?
So if you go to the original Moore's law, which basically was dictating this term, was every year the transistor size on a chip will be doubled, right? It didn't mention about the technology will shrink. I mean, technology shrinking was helping it. What I just said is this: having multiple dies together, or having a stacked die next to each other, is essentially putting those two chips together, right? And you're making a single chip based on that. So I guess that will continue unless and until at the manufacturing level people start developing some new technologies other than the CMOS, which is right now the way transistors are designed. I had a friend who was doing some PhD research, and she told me that she's working on something called spintronics. What it means is the spin of electron will determine 0 and 1, in which direction it is spinning. So that could be a next game-changing thing that may come up in the next year.
Nice.
It is possible. Nice.
And what about like an alternate to silicon? Are we looking at anything? Graphene or something like that?
Nothing as of now. I mean, people have explored it. I guess it come down again to, because the cost of this setting up this entire infrastructure and it is very it's costly, right? People don't go with that, and there are only, like, as you know, there are only 2 to 3 companies who are doing this low technology node manufacturing right now. Only Samsung and TSMC, that's it. There is no other competition. Global Foundry stopped, IBM sold off their manufacturing to, and Intel also, I guess now they are restarting it, but yeah, they are way behind it. So yeah, I mean, it'll take time, but unless and until one of them takes this bold step that, oh no, I want to go beyond this and then start something from scratch. And ASML, which is a single company who does this lithography equipment, right? So they have monopoly. They are the Europe's sole supplier of
Netherlands, right? Their machine is in Netherlands.
Yeah, right. So they sole supplier to all these manufacturing companies. And if they come up with, let's say, oh, we have equipment which only works on certain type of materials and that will help you. Yeah. It's I think it's possible. I mean, that direction has to come from someone.
Got it. So that was a commercial break, right?
Yeah, Zoom commercial break.
Yeah.
So now everyone coming up with their own silicons. Microsoft tried it with their Surface Pro X, ARM-based processor with Windows. Lightweight edition, not yeah. many much apps can work on it, and everyone bombarded it like big time. Then comes M1, which does exactly same thing, but because they have a Rosetta engine on top of it, which can translate, that is brilliance. That is poetry, where you can take an existing app, convert it over
and simply run it without even user going through the pain of it, porting it into a different architecture.
Rewriting, does that, nobody would go do that.
Does that not impact the performance?
No.
Since it is running on a layer, right? It's sort of a VM.
No.
Apparently, it was similar to what people were getting on Windows, on x86. It didn't had anything. And people, when they ported into ARM architecture that Apple is using, actually it got improved, right? Yeah.
Okay.
M1, the day it was released, it was, Zeus Lightning just hit the Mac landscape. Yeah. Suddenly, Intel was bye-bye, but the way M1 went, everyone just was like, what? I can just throw anything at it and it can just eat it up and, deliver back. So, it was godlike. Except games. Yeah, you don't need to do games. You can always, watch somebody on Twitch.
But I'm sure they might be planning this like a PS5 competitor, since they have all of the components, all of the required components they have. They just need to, mix it up, give it like a fancy Apple name, and just give it to consumers. Maybe the next Apple TV would be like that.
I mean, connect your PlayStation to an Apple TV and play arcade game. That's it.
Mm.
I mean, Apple TV is probably the one which doesn't have M1 in it at the moment, right?
That would, I think it's coming to that. It'll be the Apple TV Ultra Max Pro or, some.
No, I think either they'll start with M1 first and then slowly make it Ultra.
Super Mall. Yeah.
Apple
on
Mac. I don't know if it's there.
No, so this is something that somebody would have, asked Tim to consider. Bring your own gaming console. They have every component. They have good GPU, good processor. They can compete in that market. They have arcade tie-in with that, and just high-quality games are missing. But
yeah, that's it. That's the main problem. High-quality games are missing.
But they have in-house studios which do that, right? So it's not, and they have such a huge marketing budget, they can gobble up whatever PlayStation is doing. And I'm sure
they should develop a Rosetta like interface for porting gaming. the games. Yeah, that will be a game changer.
That will be difficult to do because gaming is a lot more intensive,
right?
It has to be quick, but day-to-day apps, it's not that you need an instant response, right? So that way. But yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that space.
It does say it has, at least on Mac.
No, Arcade works. Arcade works on Mac. Even you can connect a PS controller to your MacBook and then play a game also. That works.
Apple, Amazon Luna is doing, and Xbox, Microsoft also did it with Xbox. So they, you know, there's the whole Azure ecosystem, AWS ecosystem that they were banking on.
Oh, so Apple TV is also there. I didn't know that. So you can already connect your controller to the Apple TV then. I'm sure it will get synced once you connect it to iPhone or iPad.
It'll be better than that Geo controller they released this year or last year. Big flop. It was like a copy of a Xbox and it was too sharp. So yeah, they have...
So they're going towards that cloud gaming stuff, right? They are not pursuing...
On-device rendering, hardware. Yeah.
But I don't think this technology is like, you know, close enough to having like a dedicated hardware. Have any of you tried this?
The
I was kind of looking forward for that Google's. I don't even remember the name now.
No. So it was, I think, Arena something. Google.
Stadia.
And
yeah, then again, it needs the countries, you need the bandwidth, it does all of that checks. And yeah, only a couple of countries, states, and you know, a couple of them are getting. And
by the way, what interesting I found is in Korea, Netflix has a gaming option now.
It is. Yeah, now it's coming up.
Yeah, there.
And
So they cannot rely on just movies all the time, right? So. Mm.
Yeah, you'll have to bifurcate from that.
Yeah.
There was some latest news also where Netflix is getting some more games on board. And right now they did some shadow, they purchased some games and they're only available if you have a Netflix account. That's not pure gaming per se. That's just like, okay, you have a Netflix account, you get this game which is there in Android Play Store, but now they hid it. And it'll come back if you have Netflix. So that's not a real purchase.
Apple should acquire Netflix? Like they have that service, Apple TV service, which is not great. They can basically buy Netflix, increase their portfolio. It'll help Netflix out also because they're struggling right now.
Mm.
I think in my opinion, Netflix still has a potential. They can sneak. Really put some ads into it or product placements.
They are testing that.
Yeah, I mean, Apple always does it. Let's say, I don't know if you watch this. There is this, I don't know what is the name of that TV show, which got some Emmy, a Grammy award also, right, recently.
They had Servant. So Servant was also one of them where there's this, it's a TV show. It got season 2 also, in which there's a Apple iPad, there's an iPhone, there's a casting, there's that.
Exactly.
So they have all the devices that you would need of the Apple ecosystem. Everything is there in that product, in that series, completely end-to-end. If you see the football show, right?
Check Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso
is the same thing. Everyone has an iPhone. There are no villains. Villains don't have iPhones. That's the industry standard. No villain in any movie will have an iPhone. That's a standard. Google it. And you know the same thing in Ted Lasso, everyone has an iPhone, somebody has an iPad.
You know the reason for that, why they don't have an iPhone, because Apple's agreement has a condition in it that you can't use Apple products for destructive purposes.
So they place it and they have conditions of using the device in commercials as well as movies, and so that is the clause.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
bad guys are really going
through their documentation and checking like,
oh,
that.
Oh no,
right.
Snapdragon. Oh God, my love for A15 Bionic. I can't. You know, if I want to, dark side.
So Aniket, I wanted to ask you about your life in Korea, man. Like, how long has it been that you've been there, and like, how is your experience? And
yeah, actually, I have a podcast. I record it almost a year back, called "A Life Where We Live."
Maybe we can link.
So it has like 7-8 episodes, I believe. It was mainly I started is because I started getting a lot of these questions from people because Korea is for some. Especially in India, it's very, nowadays it's getting popular, but it's relatively was unknown. I moved here 8 years back. I moved here into 2014.
Okay.
And since then I have seen changes. It's a very safe country to begin with. You can walk in the night at 2 o'clock. No one will hurt you. It's not, I would say racism is not there. I mean, open racism is not there. Like, people will not start abusing you or shouting you. You may get a bad experience that some drunk person may start talking to you suddenly and all. But mostly whenever a drunk person talked to me, he talked very nicely and he was very friendly for some reason. But in general, it's a safe. The only issues are like food. The vegetarian options are very limited. Technology wise, it has highest internet speed. Delivery is, being a smallest country, the perks are like, if I order something at 11 o'clock in the night, it's at my door next day 7 o'clock in the morning. So if I forget any groceries for tomorrow, I can just simply order it in the night and next day it will be delivered.
Recently, India is also experimenting with like 10-minute grocery deliveries. So we are catching up.
It's a game changer.
No,
here it's not expensive. It's the cost that they have for this. There is a app called Coupang. Coupang is, I think it's a now US traded company. That started this trend, and their subscription fee was 2,500 won, which is $2.5
nice
per month. And they were planning to increase it to 4, and
I think your video went away.
My laptop for some reason is restarting. I don't know why. Yeah, we have to cut it, sorry.
Yeah,
no problem. All this right. One was a Mac commercial break.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So coming back to the question, I'm generally like fascinated about people who stay in different countries, like how they've adapted to the culture over there, and like what is better than what they were, you know, when they were staying in India, and like comparison, like how is life? So maybe your 2 cents on that.
Yeah, so Korea has been in that aspect. If I think it's applicable for everywhere other than the countries which are maybe at have a cheaper living cost than India. But if you think any developed countries, you will end up doing all your daily everything, right? You'll not get any domestic help in terms of cleaning up your house or maid or cook or anything. I think in that way India is much better. Here you have to do everything on your own. The only thing where is better is in pollution or weather. You have 4 distinct seasons. I experienced snow for the first time here, which never happens in India, at least where I used to stay. I stayed in Bangalore, actually. Sanman knows. Sanman was my roommate, and nice. Bangalore has a consistent same weather every year of the day, right? So
except this year. I don't know if you've heard, they were
rain floods. Right?
Oh yeah, rain floods. Yeah. That's a lovely infrastructure. So
our house would have been flooded, Sanwani, where we stayed, yeah, right? It was on the down. Yeah, it was on the ground floor, and plus that slope was there, right? So, but that way it's good. The good part is the technology. If you're a nerd and technology geek, yeah, this place is amazing. Like, you have faster internet access. Things get quickly changed or turned. Like, if I give up, even something for service, in 1 or 2 days it will be done. They are pretty fast in that regards. No one will try to fool you or steal you anything from you. I mean, whatever quote is, they'll price that quote. You don't have to pay anything extra. So yeah, so far been again. The only problem here is the international education is expensive. So I have, I also have twins, like Sanman. So once they go into elementary, yeah, it's difficult. So financial wise, but yeah. The rest is, I think, salary-wise, you'll get less than maybe Western countries, but you'll get similar quality of life. But opportunities are different. I mean, no one wants to come here, so your company or your job or your boss will appreciate that you're staying here.
Oh, is that the case?
I mean, people are not like, if you ask anyone whether you want to join Korea, they'll say no. They'll say, if you have opportunities in US or maybe in Europe, I'll move, right? Mm. And it has happened in my company where I'm a manager now. I'm trying to recruit in Korea. And so far, I have 3 rejections from India. And people Thanks. Don't want to simply move.
Yeah, so like, again, it comes down to marketing, right? So the way they project US life, UK life, Europe life, maybe Korea is not doing that enough.
Yeah.
Like I you agree. Said, you know, it's comfortable to live there. Standard of living is nice. Internet speeds, all that infrastructure is amazing. And, you know, job security, which is little too non-existent in some countries, which I talked about earlier. So I think that, you know, that complete package that should be appealing to anyone sensible who is like, you know, looking for
a right. I think if you're a bachelor or just got married, I mean, that's a perfect time to come to Korea. You can have access to all South Asian countries. Like Japan is like 2 hours flight from here. Hmm. Hong Kong is 2.5 hours flight from here. Taiwan, Vietnam, easy to go. You can get easy access to these countries from here, and you can just simply visit a lot of places easily over a period of time. I mean, right now because of COVID, no one can travel, but yeah, it would have been nice. I traveled to Bangkok, I traveled to Japan 2 times, I've been to Taiwan. Yes. So yeah, it's in a way that people don't realize that benefit.
Okay, one very philosophical question. Does Korea feel like home to you now?
No.
So I mean, that is something
the reason is you can't integrate into Korean life. Korean may expect you to talk in Korean. Even to get a citizenship, you have to pass Korean fluency test. Well, okay. That's a problem. You can get a long-term visa easily if you stay more than 3. So, I mean, immigration-wise, it's much easier to do it as long as you have that aspiration that you want to stay for long term here. I don't see it. The reason is I don't want my daughters to be into Korean culture. I want to still preserve Indian culture, and I think that may be possible in countries like US and all, where there are a lot of Indians. Mm-hmm. Here, Indians are pretty, I mean, the number of Indians you'll see are very rare. I mean, companies like Samsung and all, you'll see it. And the rest is apparently all universities have a lot of Indians. A lot of people come here for postdoc research and for PhDs, especially in chemistries and materials and all.
We have the reverse in DLF phase 5, Gurgaon, where we have more Kia, Koreans. Samsung, and we have all those companies, and we have so many Koreans all over the place with malls and grocery stores of all the Korean food and Foods. Korean people walking all over Foods. The place. Bibimbap and whatnot, yeah. Everything is there. So,
there are more Korean restaurants over here than I've seen anywhere else.
Correct. Yeah.
And the food is nice.
I had bibimbap, pretty good. Once.
Yeah, food is healthy. If you like, there are some good vegetarian foods, but you have to identify to each some of those categories. But even in non-vegetarian food, the food is good. I mean, I don't know if you guys tried Korean fried chicken also. I'll recommend you guys visit Korea. If I'm here, I'll definitely take you to some places.
So
but yeah,
Korean fried chicken. D Do you call it KFC?
KFC.
Yeah, and in a Western world, it's called KFC, but no one goes to KFC here. The US KFC branch, they have their own versions, and it's pretty good. There is a YouTube channel called Yongguk Namja. It's a Korean Englishman. So he's a British guy who kind of raised with the Korean guys in China. So he got fond of Korea through them, and then he came here for his studies. And he apparently runs a Korean culture experience YouTube channel. So he asks people to go and eat spicy Korean ramen and all, and try Korean chicken and beer, and records their reaction. And he's very popular in Korea. Recently, he took like seven, eight kids from UK to Korea to experience them what Korean culture is for kids, and they loved it.
Nice.
I mean, we should. I don't have time to do it, but yeah, setting up like that for Indians would have been a good opportunity. People will get more exposure to other countries than US and Europe.
Correct.
Yeah, so it was nice having you today, Aniket. We look forward to having you again, because there's so much more than processes that we have spoken about today. And obviously, we want to talk more about different technologies and, you know, something, you know, although we just touched base on the Korea topic, we would obviously want to know more about it, you know.
Yeah, sure. So I'll join back again. And it was an interesting discussion, right? We haven't even touched the CPU part. I mean, the computer or laptop portion of the processor yet, or even GPUs. I mean, there are tons of things to talk about. Let's talk again next time.
Let's do a dedicated section on GPUs. Like, I know it touched base on how they are, but like the overall perspective would be amazing.
Right, Sunman, we can share our stories of, I don't know which, what was that Bangalore's alley where we used to go for hunting GPUs?
CP Road, right?
Which street?
No, SP Road, Sardar
Pradhan. SP Road, yeah, SP Road.
Yeah, what not? Oh, I still,
and
I got my, that time's Cooler Master created Intel-based machine. Self-manually dismantled, marked every wire, and then moved it onto a brand new RGB-based case on my own. Just YouTube for reference, but I didn't go to anybody. You know, do it for me, please. No. Did it by hand from scratch, and it worked in the very first go. No tweaking. Oh, this hard disk was there. No. This fan didn't turn on. No. Just worked. That was fun. So that was like, that was like more than 10, more than 12 years old. Machine,
yeah,
it was total fun to do it on my own. So yeah, and then you did your this one, your processor heat sink was all stuck up.
Yeah, AMD update. Yeah, from 2700X to 5600X.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a fun thing to
building your own.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
it is
definitely. So that was today's episode. Thank you for tuning in.
All right. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you, everyone. The OK Interesting Podcast.